Good evening and welcome to The Simple Truth, hosted by Jeff Lewis every Saturday night at 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time and 8 and 9 Eastern on BBS Radio, where if it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com. Now the number one internet radio network in the world. And tonight, Saturday, June 2nd, 2007, we will be talking with Casey Scott all about the ELF transmissions, part four. And our guest host tonight is Casey Scott. Well, hey, that's me. Hello, listening audience. Jeff and his lovely wife, Dawn, are taking a break this weekend, and they have asked me to host my own interview. So here we are. So this will be another enlightening show tonight on The Simple Truth, featuring me, Casey Scott, and the ELF Transmissions Part 4. To call in tonight, the numbers are toll-free in the U.S., 877-876-5227, toll-free from Canada, 888-810-8322. And for international callers, it's 530-876-3222. And be sure to check in for updates at the main website at www.2behealthynow.com. That's 2behealthynow.com. And be sure to listen to our past shows at the BBS Radio Archives. For any questions, feel free to contact Jeff, the host, anytime at sacredtech@cox.net. That's SACREDTECH at Cox, COX.net. And now, for those out there trying to stop the truth and light, here is our disclaimer. Do not take the word of our host, announcer, or the word of any of our guests when it comes to your health, your knowledge, or your freedoms and rights. This show and the website and BBS Radio and its websites cannot nor will not be held liable for the results achieved or not achieved from the use of our products or suggestions. This program is for your educational purposes only, and not meant to replace the advice of a conscious family doctor or a conscious family lawyer. Always search for yourself, educate yourself, and you will discover the truth in anything and everything and as you want. Stay in the light, seek, and you shall find. So, let's get started tonight, and here is the simple truth. So, good evening, everybody, listening audience. This is Casey. And I would like to start tonight with a little poem of meditation. We started the last time that I was here with Jeff with a meditation that was a vow and oath rescission, which, as you will recall, was intended to remove any energetic or etheric cords, links, or applications, vows, and oaths that may have followed us through time and space, attaching us to other lifetimes in which we had made some sort of energetic commitment to something that at a higher level and with our higher selves did not serve us at this time and in this life. The point is that in this life we are here to achieve and to embody the fullness of who we are, the fullness of our magnificence. And so, because of the nature of being in a free will universe, if we are still attached energetically to cords and contracts, agreements, oaths, and vows, there is something that will be draining our life force and be preventing us from embodying and becoming all that we are here to be. So this is a poem about who we are and who we are here to be. It is called The Living Light. It is something that I wrote about 20 years ago. So I would like to present this and have you accompany me as a meditation. If you would close your eyes and invoke your own self, your own higher presence, and as we did last time, send a grounding cord to the center of the earth and pull it back up through the root chakra, and through the chakras of the feet. And then open your higher centers and call upon your higher self and bring that and center that with the earth energies into your heart. And imagine and reflect and visualize that we are not only embodying the truth in this poem, in this statement, but we are also extending it out to encircle and encompass the entire planet and all the beings who are on this planet at this time. This is called the living light. That you might be the living light of love, for this have you come to walk upon this ground, that you might taste of the fruits and the abundance of all that lay before you, to imbibe the simple draught of love that shall nourish and sustain you, that shall quench the thirst that has pursued you throughout the years, that will wash over you as the waters of the clouds that pour forth their living breath to cleanse and purify. All this and much more, for this have you come. To be as the radiant ones, standing forth, fully clothed, with the raiments of heaven woven upon the loom of the earthly plane, to touch sweet innocence and ignite your heart more brilliant than the brightest sun, each and every living cell like unto the whole, so that the greatest and the smallest shall be as one. For this have you come. Be ribboned with joy like a summer prize, thus shall you be, resplendent and free, in all manner of ways, countless as the stars of the night, the droplets of the seas, gentle as the summer breeze and tender touch, ever much like unto the child that you are, grand as the magnificence of a star that sparkles with your one and only light, forever into day and night, for this have you come. Bluest of blue and deepest of deep shall lay gentle upon your mind as you fold softly into sleep. The richness of sky and the fathomless sea, to these shall you cast the burden of your fears, the sorrow of your years. And after winter, so too comes the spring, and the birds shall sing, and the sun shall rise, the grass spread evergreen upon the hills of yonder dell, where shall rise a citadel wrought of crystalline glass, where shall never pass any heart saddened or stained, nor memory twisted or pained. For this have we brought witness to the singing streams and the laughing winds and the running deer. For this are we here, and for this have you come. That you might be the living light of love upon which all eyes might peer, unadorned and ever clear, radiant as the one sent forth from the sun, recognized as we, known again for all to see, all glory in all laughter and all tears, glory in touch and taste and sound and smell, for this we shall know so well, in every nerve and in every cell, singing clear as the bell that rings from yonder tower, and thus shall each glowing heart know this hour, be it ever present in every breath, every breath. For this have we all come, and indeed for this have you come. So, this is truly why we are here at this time, to be the embodiment of that love and that light that Jeff and his guests and many others talk about at this time. And it is the information that we have presented in what we have called the ELF Transmissions, which is about the acronym of the ELF, the Emerald Liberation Front, liberating and opening up to that emerald green color, that green ray of the living life force that we are, and the life force that we are here to bring to this planet. The most important thing to understand in that is that we are talking about consciousness. And so when we speak about the containment field, the matrix, the hologram, what we call the false reality that we find ourselves in at this time, and all the information that we have discussed in the first three parts of the ELF series here. The whole point is that the attempt by what we will call the other team, the left-hand path, what some people would call the darkness, has been to contain and hold, sequester and control our life force, that emerald green ray that we bring from a much higher level of our awareness and our consciousness and our full divine being. So whether the information of the split male, the castrated male, the polarization and all of that is a literal truth, or if it is a metaphor, or if it is an energetic principle, the point remains the same, that we have the capacity as the co-creators and the creator beings that we are to liberate ourselves, to become free of that binding consciousness or the force that attempts to bind our consciousness and to control it in order to build the prison that is the matrix. So we are in this hologram, and one of the tools that is used, one of the most fundamental things for us to be aware of, is the reverse of the symbology and the geometry and the numeric structures that make up this reality that we're in. We've talked about the split male and all of the symbology going back to the Egyptian period, the cult and the mystery school of the Isis-Osiris structure, and the creation of the cult of Sion, S-I-O-N, that migrated through history and has now become the force that we see today as Zion or Zionism, and the attempt to control the spherical reality on this planet and the consciousness through the split of the masculine energetic and the masculine principle. So there is another element that we have referenced, we've talked about a little bit, that I'm going to go into much more tonight, which has to do with what happened to the feminine. What is the feminine? Where did it come from? What is its role? What has occurred to it in this journey through time and space? In that context, the feminine principle is the unmanifest. It is the void. It is the pure element of creation that holds the field. It is the magnetic field that the masculine awareness or intent comes into and creates within. The masculine or the male principle creates the form. The feminine holds the field. It is creation itself. And if it can be suppressed and it can be controlled and the masculine principle can overlay on top of it, then we have the beginning of the control element of the consciousness in the hologram and in the matrix that we've been talking about. So I've explored this idea. I've explored it within myself. I've explored it with my wife and my partner, and I've explored it through the historical context of looking at everything in the time frame that we're in the last 10 to 15,000 years and beyond that. And it's raised the question, where was the origin of the schism and the split and the polarization that we're talking about? And quite frankly, I don't have the answer to that yet. I am pushing and I am asking all of you who are interested in this subject, who are exploring it with this discussion we are having, to really press on that question, because I believe as the answer emerges by the command of holding the question, it will raise into consciousness more and more refinement, more clarity on that answer and the information that we need as consciously aware beings to begin to self-contain our own consciousness and shift it away from that false reality or that false hologram that we're talking about. And the track that I've pursued in asking that question is through the tool that we have today on the internet especially, but also through printed and published material. I have explored the question looking for the historical, the energetic, the physical, as in physics, the astronomical, all of the components of the microcosm in the macrocosm, and what do we see reflected in the reality that we're in. The starting point for that in my exploration in recent times has been looking at the questions or the information that have been brought up in what people call forbidden history or forbidden archaeology, forbidden astronomy. And the question is, why is it forbidden? Why? Because it doesn't fit within the mindset of the mass hallucination or the accepted belief systems of modern thinking. What is the status quo? It is forbidden because it's iconoclastic. If it comes forward, it is going to start breaking down accepted theories that pose as facts as to what reality is in where we are today. This is really what people compare in the question between what's called uniformitarianism and catastrophism. Uniformitarianism says that in a Darwinian sense, evolution, things started long, long time ago and went in one linear direction and evolved from, say, single cell beings or microorganisms to what we have as man, humankind today. But the fact is that the record, historical record, archaeological record, and all the rest show that it hasn't been uniform in evolution. It has periodically and fairly often had catastrophic events that have cataclysmically shifted the reality. And my understanding, my sense of it, is that what we see today in terms of the configuration of the planet, the configuration of human systems, political, social, monetary, and things of that nature, and the configuration of the solar system, and the solar system in its relationship to the larger universal and galactic systems that it's part of, now reflect the concretization, or in other words, the physicality or the external projection of physical reality of what the inner landscape has come to be. And so when we talk about the split of the masculine principle or the subjugation of the feminine, we can see it and see how it plays out on the sphere of the planet or in the solar system or in the larger cosmos. My sense of it is that our consciousness collectively has brought us to this point in order for it to reflect back to us so that as we can see it in a concrete form, it will reflect the reality, it will enable the consciousness to begin to remember itself, and by virtue of that memory, we will start shifting out of the veiled and illusory reality that most people accept as real, what we are calling the false hologram. So when we talk about the feminine in that aspect, of course we all know that the planet Venus has come to embody and represent and symbolize the feminine principle in this solar system. And we find that the Earth sits very nicely between Venus on the inner orbit and Mars, which, as we know, represents and holds the energetic of the warrior, the masculine principle, and all of that. Mars sits on the outer orbit, Earth in the middle. And of course, we're familiar with the phrase that was coined recently, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Excuse me, my cell phone started to ring there. But in my exploration, what I have found recently, there are scientists and explorers who are finding the evidence. They're looking at things like mythology and legend and finding that almost universally throughout all ancient cultures, there are stories and myths about things that occurred in our solar system in relative recent time, prehistory as we know it in terms of written history, but still within oral history and known time that has been passed on. One of the... Hello, do I have a call?
Yes, you do. This is Michael. And first of all, I want to give you a good compliment. Your reasoning is absolutely excellent.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
Thanks for being on the show.
I had a question and answer earlier, and I think I have the answer. And it's going to sound a little weird. Okay, Father Time and space ladies are spider women. Women create for creation.
Say that again. Michael, start over again. I didn't hear it.
Father Time and Mother Earth are Mother Space.
Mm-hmm.
Women create the face, the place for expansion. Now, basically, if there is no place to give birth, there could be no creation.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a space holder. Women hold the space. Now, men want their creations to continue. And so they hold on to the status quo. Women want the mating to continue. In other words, to make it where there is always new creation. So there could always be greater beauty. And you can give me feedback on this, because every one of us is evolving, and none of us have it right. We're just evolving
sure,
the best picture we can.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that,
well, I think
I taught law school. It's very important to get feedback, because when you talk about something, then you begin to comprehend it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I've known that sometimes
really?
Because of the fact there were occasions, because of my law practice, I was very ill-prepared. But on the other hand, when they asked the questions, I gave the right answers, because the question gave me the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah,
therefore,
that's exactly the path.
Because when you get feedback, you absorb information, and you go further with it. And once you've done
mm-hmm.
that, it's embedded in you.
Right.
And
well,
so you can say no or yes
rule.
Or whatever you want to. But on the other hand,
okay.
It's like the concept of giving birth. I've met the void many times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's just
well,
a
let
very,
me respond
this
because
is what it feels like.
Well, let me respond, Michael. You've raised a couple of important
points.
Oh,
yes.
One is
very eager to hear your response.
Okay. One is the nature of question and answer. In my experience, the Western mind is too oriented towards immediate gratification, including the necessity for having an answer immediately to a question. And a better approach, if one wants to find the higher truth, and in many esoteric systems of pursuit of knowledge and awareness and so forth, it's important to hold the question and not necessarily have the answer come immediately.
Well, that's
and that's how we
true.
Become.
Actually, I call it stirring at the brick wall. Okay, because the answer that comes to you immediately is the answer that you've been programmed into.
Exactly, exactly. So that's why
that's
I said
what you
that.
Think you know. Not what you
yeah.
have to experience.
That's why I said in the That's why I said in the beginning that there. Basically, everything that I'm talking about in this series of discussions is what I've distilled in holding questions. What is the nature of reality?
Oh, absolutely.
Why
I had an argument with my mom, who was a physical scientist, tonight about it. And she was talking about physical science, and I said, well, you say there's a law of preservation of matter and energy, right? Well, scientists say everything is 95% of stuff is dark energy and dark matter. Well, who says one can't transform into the other? And dark matter just means what we can't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So who says there can't be a perpetual motion machine, something that transforms the dark into the light? And she was
well, dark matter.
And then I went one step further and I said, well, there's another aspect of preservation of matter and energy. Maybe there's a law of preservation of souls, and so when you think you die, and you're carrying off this world's rewards, and you've died with all the toys that you've won, but maybe there's a law of preservation of souls. And maybe the world you're creating is hell, and that's where you're going to choose to go to because our minds create. And so maybe you should choose to create something where everybody lives in peace and harmony, and not choose to create something where I have to do something negative to somebody to succeed or beat somebody else to succeed. Because I refuse right. to do that because of the fact that I feel the injury I do to somebody if I do that. If that's what the system requires, I will not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'm a security guard. And nothing ever
mm-hmm.
happens on
okay.
my shift.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason
well,
is because of the fact that I don't want anything to happen. I don't want any of the... Right now I'm serving in one of the worst ghettos in the place I live. And there have been no incidents from anybody, even though some people are... Some security guards are trying to make incidents by being macho pieces of bull who think they're... These people are inferior pieces of shit. Because we're just supposed to guard a building that got blown up by an explosion while the investigation goes on and make sure nobody goes on it and gets injured. That's our whole function. In fact, there's crack dealing going all over the place. That's not our function. And actually, the security guards aren't armed, and they can get hurt a lot if the drug dealer suspected that they were giving information to the police. And how we get paid $7 an hour.
Michael, let me interrupt you.
Okay, I know. You're doing high spiritual stuff. But on the
yeah,
end,
yeah.
there's
but
always
let,
a very physical application to how this works.
Okay. No, I understand. But I have a certain
you wanna
get content
to the
that
point?
I want to get in.
And that's great. And I really appreciate what you've said so far. So keep going.
All righty. Well, good. Well, thank you for the call, and I will. Aloha, too. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Okay, bye-bye. One important, what I was going to address and something that Michael brought up was he speaks about women holding the field, holding the void, the presence, the men wanting to manifest, wanting to create. Let's expand that to a higher level. The fact is that there is a masculine and feminine component in who we are energetically as whole and divine beings. The gender-specific embodiments that we have at this time have not always been the case on this planet, and I suspect will not be in the future where we're moving to. But our physicality and our gender-specific embodiments have crystallized in the forms that we have. Again, it's what is in the external reality that is reflecting the internal composition. My sense is that somewhere way, way back, billions and billions of years, there was, through the act of creation, through the unified field and the consciousness that extended itself into unmanifested reality, into the void, to bring forth form and form, matter and substance, that perhaps there was a kink in the works. Something progressively came down through time and space, through our journey from oneness into individuality. And something was there that was fragmented or fractured or split. It could have been the split between the masculine and feminine. It could have inherently been the split in the masculine principle that ultimately manifested in the polarization and the schism of the projection of our consciousness into a reality construct such as we are in now. So it's not just that women hold the field and the men create, because obviously men have the capacity to hold their field and women have the capacity to create. So we have the reflection of the schisms and the splits. We are working towards re-internalizing and embodying the healing process, which will reunify our consciousness and take it forward. That's an important point also to remember, because part of the control mechanism has been to maintain the illusion of polarity or duality. And one of the biggest control mechanisms in that context has been what I call the enemy construct. the creation of a concept that there is an enemy outside of ourself. The way I see it, the way I have experienced it, and the way I am working to heal it is to understand that there are no enemies, and that anything that I perceive as an enemy, I take to be an opportunity. Why is it an opportunity? It's the opportunity to reflect something that is split inside of myself. So if I feel or perceive or think that there is an enemy outside of me, I know that there is some sort of schism or split that still needs to be healed within me. And so my hologram, my reality construct, will create the occurrence or the manifestation of something to reflect that. On a collective level, of course, we see the enemy construct being used over and over and over again. Today, it's so obvious. Today, it's the Islamic world, the Muslims, and so forth. Yesterday, it was the Jews. The day before that, it was whomever. Race, religion, belief systems, all of these things have been used over and over and over again to sway and control the mass consciousness and the collective reality construct to create a externalized enemy. So the point is this, in terms of those who are seeking to heal themselves, to come to higher awareness and higher integration, that as we pull in back into ourselves and we reunify and integrate the masculine and we balance the polarity of the schism and the castrated male principle, and then we balance between the masculine and the feminine, we are healing ourselves. And because of the nature of being in a hologram, in which the small part is microcosmically a reflection of the larger whole or the macrocosm, we bring healing to the whole. I think many people listening know that as a fundamental. But the key is to really understand that as we see this war machine trying to march through the agenda and manifest war upon war and all of the rest of it, what I perceive going on in the last 10 years is that it is not achieving that goal and that agenda, because more and more people are coming into unified consciousness, more being healed, and by virtue of that, the feeding capacity to pull off of the individual and the collective life force is diminishing. When it diminishes, they cannot fully manifest the agenda and the intent of the dominant control and perpetual war and all the rest of it. So I perceive, I look at what is going on today as the evidence of the healing process. It's like if there's a deep wound in the flesh of the body and you close it up without allowing it to cleanse itself, it will fester and manifest in disease. If you open it up and you cleanse it and allow it to purify, then it will be whole again. So what we see today with the intense wars and the disease and everything else, even though much of it has been man-made and man-created, including a lot of the disease, certainly all the war and so forth, it's a manifestation of the consciousness. It is cleansing. It is coming out of the substrata subatomically, the substrata of the consciousness, and it is being cleansed and purified. So back to what I was saying, and this relates to the concretization of the manifest form that we see on the planet and in the solar system and so forth. What I have found in my exploration, and if you choose to look at this, you can do a Google search and ask questions like birthing of planets, original form, things like that. There's a website I found called Firmament and Chaos, and it may be Chaos and Firmament. But if you put those words in, you will find some very interesting things. One of the universal components of mythology around the world is the birth of Venus, or Aphrodite, or any other name. In Greek mythology, Venus or Aphrodite was birthed whole from the head of Zeus, Zeus being the solar god, the patriarch, the dominant male principle. And in the solar system, that is the planet Jupiter. And there is evidence that some have uncovered that the standard priesthood of academia would probably poo-poo and laugh at. But the fact is that if you think of it in a whole system and multidimensionally, it makes a lot of sense that the planet Venus actually was a comet or some other body that hit the planet Jupiter and then was re-expelled and formed whole, just as in the myth of Zeus and Aphrodite, and was expelled and catapulted into the inner solar system. And as a result, it ended up being captured by the Sun and going into orbit and becoming the planet Venus. Prior to that, the planet Mars very possibly was a moon that orbited around the planet that today is the asteroid belt. The asteroid belt at one time was a planet that was exploded. Some hypothesize that it was destroyed by nuclear blast and war, which is possible, or it could have been a cosmological event or a solar system event, a natural event. But the way I look at it is all of these were precursor events leading to the system, the solar system that we have today, as an outer manifestation and reflection of what we are talking about. So in the discussion of Mars, when that planet, which some call Maldek, some call Marduk, whatever it may have been called, if and when it exploded and if and when Mars was a moon orbiting it, there's evidence that Mars was peppered by debris only on one side, which corresponds to if it were a moon orbiting a planet, if that planet exploded and expelled debris, it would have only hit one side. The physical topography of Mars reflects that. If that occurred and then Mars toppled into the solar system further into where it was captured and its orbit remains, then we have a external manifestation of this polarity between the masculine and the feminine, with the Earth, with the collective consciousness of our race right in the middle. The interesting thing about the orbit of Venus is that it inscribes a number of cycles, and over an 8-year period, it precisely comes back to where it started during that 8-year period. And during that 8-year period, 5 times, it is blocked by the Sun with respect to where the Earth is. In other words, the Earth and Venus are separated in alignment by the Sun. In other words, the Sun occults or basically eclipses the planet Venus. That happens 5 times in this 8-year cycle. And if you were to map exactly where those 5 points are, you would be able to draw in the orbit a precise pentagram, which is why the pentagram originally was the symbol of the feminine or of Venus or of Aphrodite and so forth. So the interesting thing is then, of course, the number 8 is a numeric integer of the number 40. 8 times 5 is 40. We have the number 5, we have the number 8, both of which fall on another numeric system called the Fibonacci series, which takes the existing number, the first number, adds it to the next number, and creates the new number. So in other words, that starts with 1, you add it to that number again, 1 again, you get 2, then you add 2 and 1, you get 3, 3 and 2, you get 5, 5 and 3, you get 8, 8 and 5, you get 13, and so forth. This is part of numeric structure, geometry, things like that. And I only mention that only because the number 5 and 8 is part of that series. Venus, in its orbit, inscribes the number 5 through what I described, the number 8 through that 8-year orbit. And 5 times 8 is 40. The number 40 was a very important numeric indicator throughout prehistory and leading up to the Sumerian, the Babylonian, and the pre-biblical time. And if you look in the Bible, the number 40 is repeated or multiples of the number 40 is repeated over and over again. You have the 40 days of Noah's flood. You have the 40 days of Jesus' fast. You have reigns of kings that are either 40 years or multiples. You have lifetimes that are 480 years, 960 years, all based on that orbital structure of Venus or the feminine and the numeric relationship that I'm describing. In that context, every 480 years, you had the rising of Venus conjunct with Mercury before the Sun, and this occurred on a specific date. And this was known as the Shekinah. It was the feminine principle that later became, in the Bible, the supposed consort of Yahweh. And if you remember from earlier discussions, we talked about Yahweh as being the solar god in the corporate merger or the cultic merger of the solar, lunar, and stellar cults. And Yahweh became the name of that dominant patriarchal male god. The supposed consort was known as the Shekinah, and the cycle was based on the numeric cycles of Venus, culminating in the 480-year cycle that I'm talking about in the conjunct rising of the two inner planets of the system between Earth and the Sun of Mercury and Venus. The point is this. This is the feminine that has manifest within the solar system, that is external reflection of what we are dealing with today. The interesting thing is this. If you recall, 4 years and 2-3 months ago, George Bush started his little war in the cradle of civilization in Iraq, in the area of Sumer and Babylon, and the origins of all of this. And the first phase of that was bombing of Baghdad. And he called that operation, or the military did, shock and awe, S-H-O-C-K and awe, A-W-E. But isn't it interesting phonetically that that phrase, shock and awe, shock and awe, sounds just like Shekinah, the feminine principle. So you here you have this repeating in historical context going back to what we can see in this story in the Bible of Yahweh and his wrath and going after the people of Canaan and telling the Israelites to smite the Canaanites and kill them in droves, which occurred and repeated last summer, where the military of Israel was bombing the hell out of the coastline that used to be Canaan, right there in southern Lebanon. That's where the people who held the feminine principle that came originally from the north through the British Isles, through the Mediterranean, and settled on that coast, those were the people known as the Phoenix, the Phoenicians. They were known as the Canaanites. They held the feminine principle. They originally brought that feminine principle to that area that we call Jerusalem, Yerushalem, which means the founding or founded by Venus. So what you see is historically, over and over again, the manifestation in the hologram of the attempt to use the split masculine principle to overlay and dominate and control the feminine. You see it repeating today in the Shekinah bombardment of Baghdad and what we've seen so far. So there are always layers underneath layers, more and more. And of course, very soon after he started that, Bush landed on his aircraft carrier and declared mission accomplished. The fact is that everybody today says, well, the mission wasn't accomplished, but he landed on that aircraft carrier and declared that on May 1st, which is the same day as the Maypole, the beginning of the Emerald Month, May as being the month of the Emerald. It's the communist day of the worker. It is the control of the body politic within the hologram. It is the attempt to control the feminine, which is the life force, which is the emerald ray that emerges through the unmanifest into form through the manifestation of our capacity to create. And we create through three bodies, the physical, the emotional, and the mental. The physical holds a co-resonance with the physical realm, with the matter, which is the mother principle. The emotion mobilizes it. It puts the passion into the form. It is the consciousness creating through that principle of love, because the integration of form and substance and essence and form is through that power of love. And then the mind is the formulating principle. It is that masculine principle that creates construct and creates form. So when we are balanced, when we are unified, when we are integrated with the seven planetary chakras and the three bodies, we can create. When we hold that in co-resonance with our higher divine selves and the unified field of our collective divine presence and consciousness, we create, like Michael was saying, when we create what we want to create without being entrained into the negative, then we can create as we wish to create. And that's what we are all here to do at this time and in this place, is to be all that we are intended and designed to be from the beginning, which is why in our exercise last time we removed those contractual constructs ab initio to the beginning, because we go back to the beginning, we remember, we reunify, we become who we are. And then we create. We create out of those three bodies and the integrated field of our seven chakras and align that with our higher centers and so forth. And that is who we are. So as we do that individually and collectively, we become our own new reality, and we remove more and more of that life force from the use of entrainment into that negative field of the false hologram. So, in essence, that is the groundwork, that is the structure that I've wanted to present in what we're calling the ELF transmissions. From here, Jeff and I would like to go into more of these shows, more interaction with the listening audience to bring this consciousness forward. We are also going to have discussions of the present-day activity or functionality of things as they apply in the systems of law, money, health, biochemistry. What I have found in all of these systems, there is a coherence, there is a encodement that tells us and shows us the way back to wholeness. I mentioned earlier that the use of reverse symbology has always been the game plan of those who would control us. So the pentagram as a primary symbol, literally based on the orbit of Venus in relationship to the Sun and the Earth. By reversing that, turning it inside out and upside down, it becomes a tool of control, of manipulation. So there is a reason and a purpose for the center of warfare on this planet to be designed in a pentagramic or a pentagonal shape. Energetically, it has a relationship to Washington, D.C., where the obelisk of the Washington Monument, which is holding the male phallus energetic in counter opposition to the Capitol, or the disembodied head on the opposite side of the layout of Washington, D.C. So all of these things energetically are done for these mechanics and energetic systems of control. But by becoming aware of them, becoming conscious of them, we disempower them, we defuse them, and we retain or regain the energetic power and authority that is rightfully ours. So this is where our next steps will take us in these discussions when I come back and with Jeff and his other guests. And if there's anybody out here with more comments, anybody want to call in? We've got about 5-6 minutes left. If not, I will look at my notes here and see if there's anything else important I'd like to bring up. One thing is, I was reading an article recently. Somebody wrote about the Mayan calendar, and we all, of course, know that the year 2012 is supposed to be the ending of the calendar. Basically, the Mayans charted cyclical time. And what is ending is a 26,000 year cycle, which corresponds to the precession of the equinox. There's a wobble in our north point that is a small circle that takes 26,000 years to complete, and it's known as the precession of the equinoxes. And the Mayans divided that cycle into five subcycles. This one that is ending started 20 years ago. It's a 5,125-year cycle, which ends on 2012. This was known or referred to by the Mayans as the birth of Venus. So this corresponds to what I've just been discussing as far as the birth of Venus and the concretization of the solar system and the made manifest in external projection of the things within ourselves individually and collectively that need to be healed. What else can I talk about here? Well, real quickly, I'm going to also lead us into something in the modern day construction. There's a lot of information, a lot of research that has been done about modern day bloodlines as the royal families and so forth that are part of the team, the control team that we've been talking about. One of the lineages of that is the Merovingians, which were in southern France in approximately 400 to 700 AD. And in the book The Da Vinci Code, brought out recently with the movie and the book by Dan Brown, this theoretically and supposedly is the bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene that then came through southern France and then came up into modern Europe over the last 1,500 years. But if you look at the bloodlines and you look at the royal houses and you look at what has been made manifest through the political and other actions in the last 1,500 to 2,000 years, this doesn't resonate with my way of seeing it. Because if these were the true bloodlines that came from a divine incarnation or a divine manifestation like that, I don't believe that they would be participating in what has been taking place in the attempt to lock down politically, financially, and otherwise the entire planetary population. So I see that I don't have much time to really go further with this, but it's important to know that this Merovingian bloodline became ultimately the Carolinian bloodline that was brought forth by the reign of Charlemagne, or Charles the Great. And from him, he was made the first emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And from there, around 800 AD, we have eventually, over the last 1,300 years, the spread of the bloodlines and the monarchies that eventually controlled all of Europe and eventually everything we have today. It's interesting, when I looked at this, the Carolinian line, when America was first formed, we had 13 colonies, the 13 original states. There was one set of states, the Carolinas, that were split. Why was one called North and one was South? Why 12 plus 1, or two that were split plus 11? You see this symbology throughout history, and this is one key point we will go into next time, which we will lead into the founding of America, the importance and the uniqueness of America, the issue of how it was constructed, coming all the way from the Vatican through the Holy Roman Empire, through the City of London, and all of the rest of it. But the key to look at is the Carolinian line was the false overlay. It was the split male or the split false Christ, because if you look at on the coast where Carolina, North and South, lay, and you draw a line on the latitude, where do you find it goes? It goes straight across the ocean, and it goes right to Jerusalem. It's an energetic connection to Jerusalem. And we'll talk about that next time, because why Jerusalem? Why is Jerusalem the seat of all of this war that's going on? Why is it the seat of all of this stuff going back thousands and thousands of years with the biblical period, the overlay, everything that we've talked about? One of the reasons is that approximately 6,000 years ago, geologically, something formed which is known as the African Rift. It is a split in the African continent that goes all the way from very far south through the center of Africa, all the way up towards where Egypt is. And geologically, it has been shown that it ends in the valley, which is where the Dead Sea is, and touches upon right where Jerusalem is. And in looking at the externalization of who we are on the planetary scale, we have seven continents. These are outer extensions or projections of our seven planetary chakras through which we create, along with the three bodies or the three centers that I mentioned. So Africa is the root chakra. We manifested that split through the Rift of Africa, and it goes all the way down to Johannesburg, or close to Johannesburg, South Africa, where in the last 20 to 30, actually 40, 50 years, we saw that absolute distillation of that split in something called apartheid. Where was it centered? It was centered in Johannesburg, which basically means John's city, or the Burg of Johann, which is a derivative of the name John. Again, it's that same thing of the castrating of the male, the splitting, going all the way up through Africa and extending to the top of the split, which ends in Jerusalem. So energetically, in this planetary body, in the planetary sphere, we see the utility of keeping that and the warring factions in the both the microcosm and the macrocosm to maintain the dichotomy, the polarity, and the split. That is why these three monotheistic religions, based on what I've been discussing and we've outlined so far, all claim Jerusalem as their sacred city or their home because of where it lies and energetically where it sits on the planetary body and the planetary sphere. So I think we're just about out of time. Since I've never done this before, I don't know if somebody's going to come on and tell me I'm out of time, so I guess I'll just keep talking since nobody else wanted to call in. I think I should go into the closing statements, right? Okay, thanks for bearing with me, everybody. It's my first time. To all our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in tonight and for being aware enough to seek out the truth. Blessings and light on your life path always. That's the end of tonight's show, and many thanks go out to our producer, Donald Newsom, and to the BBS Radio and what he and all those involved have done with the BBS Radio Network. Now, BBS Radio is the number one internet radio show network in the world. BBS Radio is first to bring you the truth, the knowledge, and the consciousness, and so much more directly through the internet. Now we can finally get the truth out there to those who are so desperately seeking it. So thank you, listening audience. I appreciate all of your positive comments, your call-ins, and all of the communications you sent to Jeff. I look forward to continuing our dialogue and presenting more of this truth and these perceptions that we have developed. Thanks for tuning in, conscious listeners, and be sure to tune in next week for another enlightening show on The Simple Truth. Bye for now. Until next Saturday, same time, same place, and may your lives be filled with great joy and wonder always. Love and light to all.